streaming on the Civic Media app. This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. President Biden shows up in Ukraine, and while standing next to Ukraine's president, announces an additional $500 million in U.S. assistance.
Freedom is priceless. It's worth fighting for as long as it takes.
CBS's Nancy Cordes has more on the unannounced trip.
Instead of his usual 747, they put the president on a smaller 757, changing the call sign from Air Force One to Special Air Mission 60. The plane took off from Joint Base Andrews outside D.C. at 4:15 Sunday morning, stopping briefly in Germany to refuel before turning off its transponder and flying to a Polish air base near the Ukrainian border. As the president and a tiny group of aides made their way into Ukraine on a heavily guarded 8-car train, U.S. surveillance flights kept watch from Polish airspace.
The president meets with Poland's president tomorrow and other NATO leaders on Wednesday. Los Angeles County Sheriff Robert Luna says a man arrested in the weekend killing of a Catholic auxiliary bishop is Carlos Medina of Torrance, California.
Medina is the husband of Bishop O'Connell's housekeeper, who has previously done work at the bishop's residence.
Students at Michigan State University returned to classes today after a gunman opened fire on the campus last week, killing three people and wounding five others. MSU student Gabrielle Bain.
I don't think this is something you get over. I just, you know, it's, you got to take it day by day.
In south suburban Dayton, Ohio, an explosion and fire at a metal manufacturing plant sent more than a dozen people to hospitals, with at least two of them in critical condition, according to authorities. This man was in Oakwood when it happened.
A piece of rock shot, like, in the middle of the warehouse. And it was a nice chunk. It's just molten lava.
No word on a cause. A new report from UCLA's law school finds that early in the pandemic, thousands more people died of COVID in jails and prisons than initially thought. In 2020, nearly 6,200 people died in U.S. prisons, an increase of nearly 50% from the year before.
Prisons served as incubators for the virus that then spread back out to the community.
Aaron Littman is with the UCLA Law Behind Bars Data Project and says those behind bars simply did not get the care they needed.
There are people who were sentenced to a term of years in prison, but not to death, and didn't deserve to be neglected and left to die.
The Justice Department collected and analyzed data about federal and state prison deaths to help track problems, but it stopped in 2019 because of bureaucratic changes within the department.
That's CBS's Matt Piper reporting. This is CBS News.
Business owners, General Steel can help save you thousands by owning your own custom-designed buildings. Call 888-98-STEEL or visit... The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Tomorrow is primary election day in Wisconsin. Voters will narrow a field of four state Supreme Court candidates down to two. There's also a Republican primary for an important state Senate race in the Milwaukee area. The Brewers say they know they have their work cut out for them, getting lawmakers behind their proposed long-term agreement with the state. Governor Evers wants the state to pay for $290
TheRickSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I'm still fixated on this Marjorie Trainwreck Greene tweet of calling for a national divorce. And again, immediately I came out and said, look, you know, the reality is there should be a conversation on how red states are welfare states, taking more money from the federal government than blue states do. There's a huge, massive redistribution of wealth. Maybe we should be talking about that. And immediately I got people, well, you wouldn't eat, and all kinds of craziness. Now, I'm not advocating for civil war, which is kind of what Marjorie Three names, at least I see that as, it's kind of what she's doing by the calling, we need to be separated by red states and blue states. No, we just need to get rid of crazy people. And do you remember when crazy people used to go, you can love it or leave it? Well, you know, Marjorie, gather your sheeple and get the flock out. Pretty simple. Here to share some thoughts on, is there a possibility of a national divorce? What the hell is that? I've asked our good friend Carolyn Fiddler to come talk with us. Carolyn is the political editorial director over at Courier Newsroom, couriernewsroom.com, the website. Carolyn, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
So political divorce, a divorce. We're a national divorce. We're gonna split up neighborhoods. We're gonna do some creative drawing to get red states and blue states again pitting us against each other. Is that possible?
I mean, we did try it once. It didn't work out so well. And I think enough people actually studied legit history before they're before the current wave of Republican efforts to sort of erase history teaching from our schools. I don't know if people remember that was a bad thing that did not work out very well, and we should not do that again. We are a united set of states. It's kind of our thing.
Yeah, but you still got those people, the losers, who they're still a little chafe. That war of northern aggression, Carolyn. They want part. They want a rematch.
No one wants that. And I don't think that'll work out too well for them, honestly.
No, I don't think it worked out for us at all. And just to have this is the thing that gets me, to have a national figure like her. Look, for some idiot to spew this on Twitter or social media is one thing. But to have someone with the platform and the power of a sitting congresswoman, this is dangerous talk, because this filters down to the mouth breathers and the folks sitting on their toilets with their mouth open doing their research by watching YouTube videos of this moron saying, we need a national divorce. That filters
down. Yeah, and it normalizes it. It's terrifying. We can't normalize this kind of conversation. Like, it's a free country for the time being. People are allowed to say what they want, but it does normalize this kind of extremist talk, and that is absolutely very scary.
And what I say it does is it provides cover for all the really ugly stuff that's happening in the states.
Exactly.
I look at Iowa and I keep going, Iowa, how did you get so crazy? When we did our Working Class Heroes tour, we went all the way all around Iowa. I think we traveled to all four corners and everywhere in between. And I remember J.D. Scholten, who is now a state representative, saying, it was talk radio that radicalized, and cable news that turned Iowa from a solid, moderate, democratic, working class state to a bunch of raving lunatics, right-wing lunatics. And I look at the legislation that's being proposed in their house. It's insane.
It is. It really is.
This idea that we're going to make child labor great again by letting 13-year-olds clean the head splitters on the kill floor of the meatpacking plant is literally insane.
It is. It is. I mean, I feel like that's probably a good way to create a whole generation of vegetarians, but also it is objectively terrible and should not happen. So, but actually, weirdly, in Virginia, a bill recently got killed. They were a member was trying to have it so if you were working in the workforce under 18, you get paid like $3 less an hour than someone 18
or older. Crap too. Yeah,
it's wild.
Like training wages, as if minimum wage isn't low enough already.
My God, yes.
We need training wages. But then again, listen, I remember Ron Paul running on the platform that people should make $1 an hour. If you're willing to work for it, they should be allowed to pay it. If you're desperate enough, and this is what I keep saying, they're trying to push us back to the Lochner era, where if you're hungry enough and desperate enough to work for poverty wages in deplorable conditions, it's your liberty, Carolyn. It's your freedom.
You know, I like the freedom to, like, not starve and be able to have a roof over my head. That feels like freedom as well.
No, and this is the weird part of, you know, where we are in this country, where you have these voices like Marjorie Three Names or Lauren Boebert, who tweeted out today, what do Target, Capital One, Amazon, Nike, and Intel all have in common? Now, she said they ditched their inclusion and diversity and equity programs because they need more profit. I'm like, they pay lower taxes than their workers. That's what we should be talking about, not this nonsense that, again, to divide and pit us against each other. They're literally robbing us blind.
Yeah, that's exactly what they want to do. Like, look at what's happening over here, so you don't pay attention to my hand in your pocket. And this has been, I mean, the sad thing is this has been a long time coming. Like, these people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Boebert started popping up in legislatures in the early teens, and they, you know, trickled up through the system, state legislatures, get positions of power in your caucus, and then you run for, say, Congress, and it was really only kind of a matter of time until we got here, unfortunately, and here we are.
No, I mean, the thing is look, you've always had a lunatic here or there. You always had the guy who was screaming on the street corner, standing on the soapbox, you know, screaming, you know, by himself. The problem is these people have multiplied. They've organized, and they're not just one or two fringe characters. They've literally, well, look what they did to the speaker, what's his name, McCarthy, and going through that debacle. And look what they're bringing legislatively in states across this country. Again, I go back to this idea, Iowa, what the blank are you doing? We're going to make child labor great again. We're gutting education. Ohio, for instance, you know, they just proposed the Republicans' first legislation, cut taxes on the rich and property taxes, and cut $1.2 billion from education. Really?
Yeah. They wanted to destroy public education since time out of mind, it feels like, but they're actually closer to doing it now than they ever have been before, and that is incredibly scary.
Now, you guys at Courier Newsroom spend an awful lot of time in states, and a lot of them that we've got affiliates in, Wisconsin, and other places, you know, that are running bad legislation. You know, what's the most, you know, right now, what should we be paying attention to? What's the most egregious thing that's going on right now?
Woo. That is actually a tough question, just because there's so much to choose from. I think the concerted effort, I think two things come instantly to mind to me out of the, you know, myriad pieces of bad legislation moving out there, but the anti-LGBTQ bills, a lot of it is centered around transgender students, but it's, you know, trickling all the way up and down the age ranges, really. They're doing the divide and conquer in that way, like pitting just human beings against each other. Like, look at this scary person who doesn't look like you and doesn't think like you. You should be afraid of them. They're a monster. Like, that's what they're doing. So it's harder to come together and fight back against them. And also the pervasive, ongoing, escalating effort to just ruin education, specifically like history education in schools. So
yeah, you look at Florida.
Don't know that we've been here before and we don't want to go back. It was bad. It is bad. Racism is bad. It's not a controversial concept, but they don't want it being taught in schools.
Well, it'll make us feel bad. Well, you know, our widow feelings will be hurt. Remember when they were calling everybody snowflakes?
Like, who's a snowflake now? Like, I'm fine. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, look, back in 2015, we on the program did a multi-state tour of southern states where wherever they treated black people poorly, they've built a museum. There's a new institute or, you know, the lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina. It's the Woolworths Institute. I forget what it's actually called. But you could go to the actual Woolworth counter where the A&T 4 were, you know, treated horribly. And now it's a museum. And there's tourism around it going, look how bad we were. That to me is kind of an education thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe if we couch this in different terms, maybe if we stop calling it education and called it tourism. Maybe we could then teach the next generation a little bit. Maybe they could profit from our kids learning from something. Maybe that's the way forward.
They're already trying to do that. They're trying to destroy public education and give it all to private schools and charter schools. And so they're not taking their foot off the gas pedal in any respect when it comes to this stuff.
Yeah.
It's really hard to choose just two of the worst things.
So. No, it's frightening on a whole bunch of levels. But you know, back to the trans thing, I don't proclaim to have the right answer or any answer. I don't know how I would react, but I do know one thing without question. A government of radical religious zealots, probably not the group I want making a choice for my child. I'm just kind of throwing that out there.
That's for sure. And these people just want to exist. They just want to like live a life as themselves. And like, why can't you just like leave people alone and let people do that? Like, why is that suddenly so difficult? I remember, you know, we remember back when, you know, Republicans were the party of smaller government.
Remember that? It's hard to go back that far. Less intrusive government, get big government out of our lives. And yet every time I turn around, they're proposing something to put themselves in the most intimate portions of our lives.
Yeah.
And again, I come back to, I want government doing things. I want them regulating trains, for instance. You know, I would like them to regulate health and safety, for instance. I would like them to make sure that dust levels are such that they don't explode manufacturing facilities. I would like them to do those, make sure the air and the water and the food. You know, I don't want them in my bedroom. I don't want them in my kid's bedroom. I think that's a fair balance, no?
I completely agree. Like, whatever happened, and just like a little bit of privacy for everybody. Just, you know, that person doing their thing doesn't affect you. So just leave them the hell alone. Why is that suddenly so hard?
No, it's crazy. Now, President's Day, obviously, you're in the, what do they call Virginia? The mother of
the
presidents?
The mother of presidents.
Something?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of a cheat. Kind of a cheat. Because you have three of the first four. So you have kind of a huge head start, no?
Right, but there were other colonies at the time, too, and other, like, first, you know, early states. Like, it just,
yep.
It didn't have to just be people from Virginia. Like,
but nobody wanted to drive that far. There were no superhighways back then.
But the Capitol wasn't even in D.C. until, you know, a couple of, like, at least two of those first three were gone. So, like, they still had to commute. Would have been easier if they'd been from New York, probably.
Or Philadelphia.
Yes.
So it is that. But, you know, this is one of these things where I'm looking at Marjorie Three Names and her declaration of a national divorce while our commander-in-chief, our president, is in Kiev in a war-torn area on the national stage. It seems...
prioritize that appropriately.
No. There's so much going on. There's so much bad, and it's easy to go, you know what? I'm just going to put my head in the sand and run away. Because again, I look at Iowa. Oh my God. Yeah. I look at Texas right now. Florida, you know, they're trying to move legislation to shield trucking companies from being sued, for big claims. You start going, you know, what's going on here?
I think things are going to get worse before they get better, unfortunately. I do, maybe I'm a Pollyanna, I do think they'll get better. Politics is a little cyclical that way. But I worry that they're going to get worse before they do.
Got to ask you about the train.
It's going to actually hurt a lot of real human beings. So, and also for anyone watching, this is Nebula. She is a very progressive cat.
There you go. Last question I've got for you, the train. Got to get some thoughts on the train. Where are you on the response to by the administration to the train? I know you got the Republicans who finally figured out there was a train wreck. We'd been talking about it for, you know, like over a week. And then one day Republicans go, oh, train wreck, a way to attack Pete Buttigieg and Biden. Wow. Now it's all we hear about.
Yeah.
Did you hear the Chinese balloon might not be a Chinese balloon? It might be an American spy balloon. This is what's coming out of the hillbilly Scientologists over at Q. Yeah. Fun.
Oh, gosh. Wow. I mean, Republicans will look for, I mean, they see that Buttigieg is a rising star in the party. He's definitely not anywhere near done with his political career, and he's smart, and I think they're afraid of him, so they're trying to, you know, defang him, and obviously Republicans don't want Joe Biden to get reelected, so let's take every opportunity to hammer him as well. It's not, they don't care about the people in Ohio. They don't care about people who live in that town or anywhere around it. They don't care about the environment. They just care about power, and that's what Republicans do so consistently better than Democrats.
Sadly, you are correct. CareerNewsroom.com, the website. Carolyn Fidler, political editorial director. Appreciate the time. As always, such fun talking with you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I think it's interesting that Carolyn brought up the transgender issue because, you know, we've been hearing a lot of things about bathrooms. Lots about bathrooms. There's going to be someone going to the bathroom. Didn't hear much about this story. Evidently, one of the resource officers at a Texas grade school evidently left their handgun in the third bathroom stall. Because of course, you know, that's what you want laying around for third graders to find in the bathroom. And I'm like, what are you doing in the bathroom stall where the kids go? I mean, that was my question. Why is the resource officer even in there? How did you drop the gun in the third stall when there should be staff restrooms? This isn't every elementary school I've ever been in. You've got restrooms for the adult folk, and then you got those really low to the ground things that there's no way you're getting down to. Who's going in there? But evidently, back in January, a third grader at this this elementary school in Rising Star, Texas, found the gun in the bathroom stall. Yeah. There you go. Also, another bit of fun and entertainment. Thank you. Thanks to Alabama. I don't know if you saw this story over the weekend. This guy, his name is Anthony Mitchell. Anthony Mitchell was having a kind of a mental moment. And his family called the police for an intervention to try and, you know, a welfare check, if you will. And, well, they arrested him because I guess he threw some shots into the air, had the gun. So they arrested him, like, you know, back early January. And on January 26th, he died in jail. His body temperature, they did a rectal body temperature, 72 degrees. So what does that mean? That means they took this poor guy, and for over 2 weeks, they put him in a freezer. Because I don't know how you get a body temperature down to 72 degrees. And that's probably after a couple hours of being transported and moved around to the hospital. This, again, is another one of these moments where you've got the FBI now, I guess, is involved. You've got a lawsuit. It's the only way we heard about this. But it makes you go, what is it with these cops? Again, I support the police when they're not wrong. Here, wrong. It's like that story from Arkansas where they, on a wellness check, they took this guy and they starved him to death in the jail cell. It was a 200 and some pound guy when they laid him on the morgue table, 90 pounds. Stop and think about that. But again, these are good God-fearing Christian states. And the policies that they keep moving towards us are really frightening. But how do you, in the name of humanity, do such a thing to anyone? It's just beyond me. Just beyond me. And it comes back down to policies. It comes back down to oversight. It comes back down to there's got to be someone paying attention. But the good news, there is good news. Good news is Joel Osteen pays himself an annual salary of $54 million a year. Stop and think about that for a second. His church is the former Houston Summit, where the Houston Rockets used to play basketball. He drives a Ferrari, costs $270,000, lives in a 70,000-square-foot mansion. But, hey, when the hurricane hit Houston, wouldn't let anyone into his church. And we give them tax breaks. They don't pay taxes.
The Shaw 101 FM.
Hospitals must have staffing flexibility. In other words, cut nurses, raise profits.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Here's an interesting story. Evidently, Ron DeSantis is going to not show up to CPAC. I find that incredible. He is not going to show up to the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, which I have, you know, affectionately dubbed as Crazy Pack, because they've really gone off the rails. And maybe this is him, you know, going, you know, this is Trump's crowd. We're gonna stay away from the crazy people, not put myself in a position where I'm gonna look bad, because not his crowd. But I do find it interesting that maybe this is the kind of splitting of the faithful. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of DeSantis skipping CPAC?
Well, DeSantis recently was starting to be hit for focusing, quote, too much on the woke. And that was just, I think, probably about the last week. Also, he may try to be centric, although he has a primary to get through. So, you know, maybe he's just trying to have the effect. I doubt it's because he had a prior commitment.
Oh, no, there's no way. I mean, that's, you know, that's like the who's who of the crazy now. It used to be the
maybe that's partial why he is not doing it at this point in time.
Yeah. I can't wait for Crazy Pack this time. Maybe they'll come up with another one of those golden Trump dolls that they rolled out the last.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That
years
was
ago.
Bizarre.
I want to get your thoughts on this tweet by Marjorie Taylor Greene on this national divorce thing. It just seems to me on President's Day, while the president's in Ukraine, on a national stage as Commander in Chief, is this the right time for something like this? And calling for treason. I mean, calling for a civil war? Does this seem kind of like the wrong thing to be doing? I just want to get your thoughts.
Well, it was revealed the other day. She went bombastic at the very end of a briefing, private briefing, on the balloon, and she was going crazy with it. And then she now, of course, suggests splitting up the U.S. by red and blue states. She called it a national divorce for people who are sick of Democrats, quote, traitorous policies in a tweet. She gets this attention. I mean, nobody in their right mind would even make this as a sitting office holder, make this suggestion, to do this. I mean, it seriously, even though she's just completely out of her mind, but it goes back to referencing of something that was a reality in this country of two Americas and how many people died. I can't imagine, how people that she represents let her get away with this, because there are so many issues out there that have to be affecting those people. This is just pure political, not craziness, political entertainment on top of it.
Yeah. No, but for me, it's like, I get that this, it's any other day you throw this out, but on President's Day, while the president's in Ukraine, it just seemed like for maximum outrage, maximum trolling, this is where she went.
Well, remember too, Rick, in December of 2021, she tweeted about the same type of idea, but also suggested that if people move from, this is not a split yet, but if people move from blue to red states, they should be barred for voting for a period of time. She's, mask mandates compared to the Holocaust, all the conspiracy theories of QAnon, and again, she just is not in her right mind with the right faculties, but what a waste of an elected office.
But she's getting more and more attention, though. I mean, she's rising in influence,
well, sure.
and that's the scary
part.
Sure,
that's why she does it. They said the other day at the end of the hearing they knew she would do something because she wants her time, yelling liar with the president. You know, she wants her time in the sun, and I think it's just sad, and what a waste, again, of her office to do things that could help people. You know, if once in a while somebody makes a bizarre statement, that happens all over the place. This is planned, it's methodical, it's constant, and it's really pathetic. Maybe if they don't ever print anything she says again, it might cure her.
No,
well,
I mean,
it won't cure her. Maybe it'll stop her a bit.
Yeah, the moneyed interests, you know, the fact that this generates revenue and, you know, there's all this buzz around it, it's sadly never going to stop. That's the weird thing in all of this.
Right. Yeah, it's sad.
Now, I did want to get your thoughts on the president going to Ukraine today. Good move, bad mood, especially with, you know, what's going on here at home with the East Palestine situation. Your thoughts?
Oh, it's a good move. I care about East Palestine. Also, I care about what happens there. It's down in our neck of the woods, but there are all kinds of things that happen in America, and those situations have to be addressed. But the job is a multitasking job, and he had some things also scheduled. But it's a big deal. It's a good thing to do because it does several things. One, it shows the Russians that, we are serious to do what he did, to go into an active war zone, which is the presidents have went into war zones by surprise visits. This is the first time a president has went into a war zone without us having our troops in that war zone. So they had to rely totally on the, on the Ukrainians. Number two, again, it shows, our resolve to help. But also, for our NATO partners, I think this is also a big deal. I noticed a few of the Republicans had criticism, but it was a few. A lot of them didn't criticize him. And they based it on, well, he goes to their border, but he doesn't come to our border and do something. Those arguments were so weak that they only had a couple of arguments like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's totally appropriate what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking to people all day about, why am I supporting this? Because, for the most part, I've had people say, I remember you were anti-war. I go, I am anti-war, when you can avoid it. This is a situation where Russia invaded a sovereign nation. And they, from all reports, they're planning on moving on. And if Ukraine loses, I fear they go to Poland and we end up involved in this because NATO is not going to allow them to invade a NATO country.
Right, and we're vested in this, and the majority of the citizenry supports it, and also a majority of the Congress supports it. So it's not like he went out on his own and did something. And again, I don't like the wars, especially the one that we were tricked into supporting, and I don't like it, but this one is we're not looking for weapons of mass destruction in Ukraine. The weapon of mass destruction is Putin.
Yeah. No, it's that simple to me. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I want to also want to get you're in Ohio now. Any word on the train derailment? I know your family's in the area where this has happened. Any recent news? Are you any family in the zip code that's going to be getting $1,000 from Alan Shaw?
No family up there. I mean, I know people, all over the area. I used to represent a slice of Columbiana County. Jim Traficant had the rest of it. So there's still a lot of, people wanting the transparency involved with the issue to know, the testing is continuing to go on. As far as the $1,000, I would surely hope that doesn't isn't used to say that, you know, Norfolk and Southern doesn't have liability. I would surely hope that is not used somehow by them to say they don't have liability. I just think that they've got to look at exactly what happened, how it happened, why it happened, how to prevent it. Look at the specialty brakes. Look at everything involved in the issue, because, you know, there's other portions of railroads across this country that the same type of thing could happen. So the more information they get, I think the better off they are. Also, questions to be answered of why those were not labeled in the first place as dangerous, toxic chemicals.
No, absolutely. But after we talked the last time, you had brought up a couple of questions. You know, why wasn't there a website? Why isn't there stuff? And I actually went, that night I went and hunted it down. And there is a website. There is a phone number to call. They've had it set up almost from, like a couple of days afterwards.
Uh-huh.
215-814-2400 is the phone number for the EPA Region 5. They also have response.epa.gov East Palestine Train Derailment as their website, which is a mouthful. But I assume if you go to the response.epa.gov, it'll be right there. But, there are these resources out there. It's just that it wasn't being promoted, and I didn't know it was out there.
I didn't know either. I mean, I had at the time no idea. When I sent a message to some people in the governor's office suggesting a website, I didn't know that there was a website at that time. I mean, the information's been so sketchy, and people were just calling all over the place, to different water authorities that had no more information. In fact, the water authority local with my daughter had answered, we don't know. That's the state, not us.
We don't know. Leave us alone. And it is, but this is the EPA who has one, and I got to assume that the state might have one as well. So I got to think that, they just done a really terrible job of getting that out.
Right.
Because you brought it up, and I'm like, I can't imagine that they wouldn't have thrown up a website. Any idiot can do that.
Well, they can put out amber alerts in areas to phones. For example, your phone goes off if it's within a certain area. I would assume they have capabilities to put out, here's a website information, and you touch a button and it can go across the phone systems for people in the area, I would assume. That didn't happen, but I would think they could do that, or should be able to.
Yeah, I mean, they've got everything else. Why not be able to do something like
right.
that? Or at least target it in a way. I mean, you got Google Ads. I mean, there's got to be a way to target this in this day of instant technology. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, but yeah, there is something that got there. And finally, I wanted to get your thoughts on the horrible news I got yesterday. I got it yesterday. I'm not sure when it actually came out, but President Carter is, I guess, entered hospice. They moved him from the hospital back home.
Jimmy Carter is, his legacy is really being put out there now while he is, still alive. And of course, he entered hospice and chose not to have any more medical treatment. Carter, is more popular now, obviously, than when he was President of the United States and had lost his election by a landslide. And mainly the reason, of course, there was the issue of the Saudis who cut off the, gasoline. But I think we can recognize mainly it was Iran, the whole hostage crisis. He tried to do something that was a failed effort in the desert outside Tehran. And so I think that Iran was a big factor. But I have to tell you, as a person, even at that time, in 1976, he may have been unpopular and he may have lost, but I think a lot of people recognize that he is just and was at that time and is now a fantastic person, fantastic human being. And after he left office, he stayed modest. I mean, he could have, presidents give pretty high paid speeches, and they accumulate a lot of wealth. We know they do that in most cases, and I'm not criticizing them for going out and give speeches. That's their prerogative. But Carter remained dedicated to a lot of people. Still taught Sunday school. I was active with Habitat for Humanity. And I saw firsthand what he did in building home after home using the power of his previous office to raise money to build homes for people. I mean, he's just one good, solid person, and I think a very kind person, and that has resonated through his life after he left. So he's, you know, very, very popular, more than when he was the president.
Yeah, he was the first president I really remember. I remember reading about Nixon and about Ford, you know, because I delivered newspapers then, but I didn't really understand what was going on. Carter was really the first president that I paid attention to. And, you know, I remember watching, you know, the Malaise speech and, you know, I think back of that and I go, you know, that, you know, asking Americans to sacrifice, I know it was a different era back then, but I think imagine a politician saying, you know, put on a sweater, you know, suffer a little bit. I just can't imagine that.
Yeah. He formed the Ford or the Carter Ford Commission for federal elections after the Bush-Gore election. And we based the Help America Vote, Steny Hoyer and I did, based it off of the Carter Ford Commission. He was gracious enough to put his time into that. And we took their recommendations, the most of them, and put it into a piece of legislation. After it passed, they said he was going to call me, and he did. And it was kind of a surreal conversation, Rick, because he called and he said, "How are you?" And I said, "Fine." He said, "Congratulations. I think it's next to civil rights legislation in elections. This is one of the most important things that we could do." And I thanked him, you know, for his time and everything. And then he said something that was kind of, I mean, I met presidents and everything, but he said something that was just kind of, you know, so Jimmy Carter. And he said, "I understand Jerry's going to be calling you, Jerry Ford." He said, "Hey, tell Jerry I said hi. I owe him a call. Tell him I'll call him." And it was just such a down-to-earth type of guy. So, good guy.
Yeah, using you as his bag man.
He was something.
Yeah,
he
still is. I mean, he hasn't gone yet, but I'm preparing myself because, you know, it's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sad. But Bob, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Rick.
Seriously, I mean, I think back to that speech and, you know, I think back to his administration. A lot of things I would have liked to have seen differently. But I think, you know, Bob's right. You know, I think it was Iran that, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, the kids in the playground, you know, all hopped up ready to go to war with Iran and me going, "No, I don't think that's a great idea. Don't think it's such a good idea," because, you know, it was just a couple years earlier that I remember, you know, the people that came home from Vietnam being dumped into our housing project, and the fact that, you know, you had this president trying to keep us out of that. And I do remember when Operation Eagle Claw failed, and there's a lot of conspiracy around, you know, why that failed, but, you know, he tried to send, you know, people in to rescue the hostages, and it failed, and that, I think, was the end of his ability to win in 1980. Again, there's a ton of potential conspiracy around that, but ultimately the country made a decision. They made a decision to go away from the guy who wanted to put solar panels on people's homes to the guy who told you, "No, you don't have to sacrifice. You don't have to put on a sweater and worry about the thermostat. We're going to oil," and, you know, made an agreement with the Saudis. And it's interesting how all of this stuff kind of plays and just keeps repeating itself. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. More than 400 Jewish mothers, many carrying their children, marched on City Hall in New York City. Their cry, which rang out in both Yiddish and English, was, "We want food for our children." On the eve of the U.S. entry into World War I, inflation had sent the cost of food skyrocketing. For example, in 1916, the cost for an average dinner for a medium-sized family was 76 cents. By 1917, the price had more than doubled to $1.99. at a time when families were fortunate to have an income of $40 a month. Seeing grocery bills jump from $22 to $59 for the month was more than most families could bear. Working parents could not afford to feed their children. Many were forced to sell family heirlooms and pawn what possessions they had just to survive. The Mothers Anti-High Price League, a socialist-led organization, organized a march in protest of the inflated prices. In the days that followed, boycotts, sometimes violently enforced, targeted food shops accused of price gouging. Some women also attacked customers who visited the boycotted shops. Unfounded rumors swirled that the protests were a German plot. The anti-German hysteria leading up to World War I put the city on edge. By February 24th, thousands of women from all five boroughs gathered in Madison Square to protest the high food prices. At the front of the march waved a white flag emblazoned with the single word, starvation. City officials responded by providing cheap food for purchase throughout the city. This provided temporary relief, but did not address the impact of high inflation on food costs. Adequately feeding our nation's children is a problem the U.S. still has not solved. According to a study done in 2012, 1 in 7 households, or more than 17 million people in the United States, faced food insecurity. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. I think about that election in 1980, that being an enormous one, and the first one that I ever really, really paid attention to. I spent time, you know, in the late 70s, you know, doing kind of, you know, kid work on campaigns, you know, for when Kucinich was running for mayor of Cleveland. I remember, you know, handing out, you know, flyers for him. I didn't know why. I just remember, you know, he was in the newspaper. He was mayor and, you know, handing out flyers. But Carter's campaign was that 1980 campaign was the first one I really paid attention to. And it was one of those moments where you go, you know, it was a crossroads moment. And I see us very much, you know, a couple of times since being in those moments where the choice you make, you know, which way will you go? And, you know, Carter was talking about moving us on a path of sustainability and, you know, green energy and that. And, you know, Reagan was, no, we don't need to do any of that. And, you know, ripped the solar panels off the White House and made sure that we're still to this day hooked on oil and fossil fuels. Whereas in that moment, we could have changed. Now, they were both similar on the neoliberal stuff that I think Biden is changing. And looking back at Carter's presidency, I do have a problem with massive deregulation. The reason the Teamsters didn't endorse Carter in trucking deregulation, which just destroyed the trucking industry and the airline industry. But again, I go back to why. You know, why did they do this? They did it because of the energy costs. They did it because they thought they could streamline things. It would cut down on energy costs and prices and help consumer prices. They thought they were, you know, again, the intention being we're helping people. We're helping poor people, you know, get through the crisis. You know, we're making things, you know, they did it for you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. They're doing it because they thought it was going to help people. Whereas Republicans knew why they were doing it. It's going to help corporate America. It's going to help destroy those labor unions. It's going to help put workers in their place. Same thing with the airlines. Look what, you know, deregulation did to the airlines. Look at what's done to the trucking industry. Look at what deregulation has done across the board. It's created billionaires and you know, multimillionaires, and it has done that. It has worked exactly as it was supposed to, but it's crushed working people. And what they've done masterfully, and you got to give them credit. They've convinced, you know, the working class of this country to think in terms of, you know, they're the boss. You know, this Stockholm syndrome for working people, that they're going to someday be that sitting in that shiny city on the hill, looking down on those poor people. So they'll forgive a lot of these horrible things because they think someday it's going to be them. And the reality is it never is, which is why I think we have a lot of the anger we have today. You know, I look at the Reagan years, that 80 election, and I look at 2000. 2000 was an election of, you know, I think Al Gore is elected. I don't think we have 9/11. I don't think we have an economic collapse like we did. Now, was he great for working people? Not overly. He wasn't horrible. He wasn't Bush, but he wasn't great. And this is where my view is, we as working people need to, again, take off the red hats and the blue hats and pick up a hard hat. It's the money versus the rest of us. And the sooner we wake up to that, the sooner we got a chance. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you find your favorites. You'll find ours. You got a question, comment, something on your mind? Email me, Rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here.